Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Despite investments in classroom technology, recent trends reveal serious declines in literacy, critical thinking, and other key education scores. Can we reverse these troubling trends? Here with this story, InfoTrack reporter Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Our guest is Jared Cooney Horvath, PhD, a neuroscientist and now the author of The Digital Delusion, How Classroom Technology Harms Our Kids' Learning and How to Help Them Thrive Again. Doctor, you open the book with a stark claim that today's children are cognitively worse off than previous generations. What specific cognitive abilities are declining, and what evidence convince you that this is more than just nostalgia or moral panic?
Unfortunately, it seems to be across the board. Most things we touch, whether it's the higher order stuff like literacy, numeracy, creativity, critical thinking, all those are going down. And then when you get even to the nitty gritty stuff like working memory and attentional load and executive function, everything just seems to be going in the wrong direction, even general IQ. And so when you go and start to kind of track back the data, you realize most of these skills were developed through school. And if kids are still going to school, more school than we are, yet they're performing worse than we were, then something must have happened in schools to kind of decouple this development from schooling. And the only thing we can really solidly land on is the introduction of tech. That seems to have really pushed things in the wrong direction.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You argue that the decline is related to something called EdTech, which is classroom technology. Explain what that exactly is in classrooms and why you think that's making a difference.
EdTech is basically what we tend to define it as any student-facing internet-connected device. So most people think of smartphones, which is absolutely can be considered that, but it's laptops, it's tablets, it's these devices that our schools are giving kids that are stamped with the word educational, but they're no different than any other computer you'll use. So all the problems we're seeing with tech outside of the classroom just basically enter into the classroom, and now they're just interfering with learning and student development.
In the book, you write about five fundamental myths about ed tech. Which of those myths do you believe has been most damaging, and why has it been difficult to dislodge?
I think if you had to kind of sum up all the myths, they're going to fall into the category that learners know best, that kids are the best at driving their own learning. They know what they need. They know what they got to learn. And that's kind of the mantra of most of these tech companies, is that give kids access to the internet or to this program and they can do it themselves. And there's probably no more damaging myth than that. Kids are not mini adults. And our job is not to simply keep them alive as they grow. It's to form them, to mold them into healthy, sustainable, effective adults. And the best way to do that, as we've always done it, is to let experts pick. Here is the best way to learn. Here is how pedagogy works best. Here is the right way to learn math so that you can do later math. So once we started farming out the process of learning and pedagogy and techniques and skills to the kids, that was a very good sign that things were going to drop from there.
Artificial intelligence obviously is on the rise. Has that been incorporated into ed tech, or is that still to come?
Unfortunately, most ed tech now will have AI components, whether you want them or not. And those AI components are stripping data from the users. So, I mean, aside from the fact that these tools are harming learning, you've also got to worry about this idea of data mining and the fact that they're selling children's data to other entities. Who the heck knows why or what for? But AI in particular, there's a lot of schools now opening up saying that AI can become like a tutor and it can guide a kid down a certain path. Well, I'd love to see that data. We've been trying AI tutoring since, believe it or not, 1922, back when the AI wasn't as powerful as it was today, but we've been doing that for well over 100 years, and we keep failing at it because human beings, by and large, we didn't develop to learn from tools. We developed to learn from other human beings. And having another person there that we can mirror, that we can mimic, that we can learn from, that drives learning far better than having a program ask you a good question at the right time. So I'm not too thrilled about the AI move either.
You're careful to say that your book is not an anti-technology book, but a pro-learning one. What kinds of technology do belong in schools, and where should those hard lines be drawn?
The question itself kind of begs the answer. When we ask, when is tech good? The underlying assumption is that it is good and that we just need to figure out when. And I'd argue that there is no data to show that it's good really anywhere. If you had to really kind of boil it down, though, you could say there's kind of three things to think about. One, something is going to be better than nothing. So if we have another COVID and we're shutting down schools, of course you bring in tech. I'd rather you do something than nothing. It's not that you can't learn from tech. It's just the learning is shallower and worse. Other than that, the only places we might see it are what are called intelligent tutoring or learning disorder remediation. That's basically when a computer program just drills and drills and drills a kid on a particular skill. And in those instances, you might use it. But the problem with that then is anytime a kid learns a skill really heavily online, it's very difficult for them to move that skill offline. So whereas they might be doing better on the program, there's no guarantee that they'll be better on a test or applying that in the real world off the program. So that's where you got to pick and choose your poison. If you're going to use a tool for drilling like that, you better devote explicit time to also moving that skill offline so kids can take it off the screen as well.
One of the other ideas that you challenge is the idea of personalization and student choice in learning. Talk about that for a moment.
Human beings, we are really bad at knowing what's good for learning, but we're really good at knowing what feels right for learning. And that's one of the big problems is what feels good often isn't what is good. I liken it to the gym. If I go to the gym and I'm feeling good, chances are I'm not working out. I set my stair stepper to 2 and I'm like, I'm feeling good. It's the struggle. We call it desirable difficulties. It's the friction where you're going to get the benefit from learning. And so when we let kids pick their own learning techniques, most of them will pick the easiest, most frictionless way possible. And to them, it will feel as though they're learning. But when we test them later, their learning is almost nothing. Now flip it. Make kids do the hard work and ask them, do you feel like you're learning? And almost to a man, they'll say, no, this is too hard. I'm not learning a thing. Test them a week later and they will have learned a lot. So what feels right and what is right is often not the same thing. And unfortunately, when you give kids the power to choose their own delivery modes, their own strategies, they take that easy path and their confidence goes up. They think they know more than they do, but until you put it to the test, they never really recognize it. And then you've got this issue of overconfidence and underdeveloped skills underlying that.
We talked a few moments ago about AI. What about smartphones in schools today?
For 12 years, I've been asking people, name one reason a kid would need a smartphone at school. And I'll not talk about this again, but I've never really gotten a good, reasonable answer. Phones do not belong in schools. There's a term I'm going to borrow from a man named Andrew out of Canada. He calls it the walled garden, where if you ever see these kind of walled gardens across Europe, the walls aren't there to keep the world out. They're there to build a very specific environment within which the garden can grow. School should be the same thing. I know there's a lot of stuff going on in the real world. There will be phones. Kids will use AI in the real world. That's fine. But what we need to do is think of school like a walled garden where we build a context that fosters deep attention, that fosters deep thinking, that fosters consideration and collaboration. Most of these tools do nothing but circumvent that process. So bring a phone into school, learning will go down, attention will go down, relationships will go down. Ban a phone from school, all those things can start to come right back up.
Do you have any final words for parents who are concerned?
I'd say absolutely. If you're a parent, step one, start at home. Buy a printer, print out all your kids' homework, all their reading. Take a look at your own tech use. Make sure your kids aren't seeing you use tech. Just kind of lock down your home. And for teachers and on the school angle, start by building a coalition. One voice is always just going to be labeled as the problem case. But if you have, say, 10 parents or 10 teachers all coming together, people will start to listen. And the easiest, lowest hanging fruit is just opt out. Is to say, as parents, as teachers, we would like to opt our children out of unnecessary tech for the next year. And that's a good signal to the school that things are changing and that people are going to start bringing up these topics.
Jared Cooney Horvath, the author of The Digital Delusion, How Classroom Technology Harms Our Kids' Learning and How to Help Them Thrive Again. Jared, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.